This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. Very interesting show for today. There's a lot of excitement going on. Ginger and I will be having our own radio show starting in maybe the first week of April, Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on America Out Loud. And I have a new blog up on America Out Loud. So I'm going to be actually a columnist once a week on America Out Loud, which is an important stretch of my energies with all the things that are going on. And in the new report, it's really worth your going to America Out Loud because it's about the newest thing that's going to be descending upon us on a big scale, which is the World Health Organization wants to organize global international health by making treaties with the nations who are crazy enough to do this, and the whole European Union is with them, giving up national sovereignty, not for local universal health care, global universal health care. And on America Out Loud, again, we have a very interesting show today. And Patrick Wood, our guest. My guest, Patrick Wood, is a very interesting man. He does work that integrates so amazingly with our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. Let me remind you that COVID-19 and the Global Predators, if you're stretched for money, you can get it for $2.99 on Amazon and other big carriers in the ebook. You can also buy the book and get it rather quickly from Amazon around the world. And if you like to buy direct, Global 19 and the Global Predators, buy it from us on wearethepray.com. That's our dedicated site, wearethepray.com. And remember to keep up with me, go to breggin.com, B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com, and get our frequent alerts. That's the best way to stay in touch. We are doing so many different things right now. So before we get into Patrick's stuff, Patrick gave me some breaking news. Patrick, can we get him up on the film here with me? Oh, there we are. This fine gentleman is Patrick Wood. Patrick is he's a critic, an expert critic, which is really great, of sustainable development, green economy, green nonsense. And he's been looking at the Agenda 21 and the UN and how it feeds into that stuff. That dovetails a lot with our book, because these are the same global predators, pretty much with some different characters, who are trying to jam down our throats COVID-19. Their next agenda actually is going to be more of what Patrick's been talking about, because they're going to go back to the dangers of global warming. And he's really into technocracy. He's got a website, technocracy.new.com, and citizensforfreespeech.org. He's got a lot of wide interests. He's written a book of Technology Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. And that just dovetails with, could have been technocracy rising, COVID-19 and the global predators. It's all about the same thing. But give us the breaking news on Canada. You've told me you've been following them. We've been trying to.
Well, yes, exactly. And Canada's been having a huge free speech crisis with the truckers and so on going to Ottawa in a huge caravan, never seen before in Canada. But they went there and they shut down some of the streets, some of the border crossings and stuff. And the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau executed the emergency, almost like a War Powers Act, to stomp these people into oblivion. And for a few days, there was just a lot of fear and a lot of pressure and batons and horses running over little old ladies with wheelchairs and stuff. It's like, what in Canada? Well, he just recanted the emergency powers order.
Such good news.
On video, on national TV, he canceled it out. He said, we're not going to do it. Now, he didn't say that I'm talking to the truckers. Okay. He's still not talking, but he did say very plainly that we're not going to invoke that now. We're not going to have it. And even though their parliament had authorized him to go for another 30 days, so this is, we're done with it. And the local police forces can do their job. They have all the tools they need, et cetera. And they do to keep the people safe. And he left it at that. But it's a huge win for the truckers, because what he did was totally unconstitutional. And the lawsuits have been filed against him in the last few days to take him to task on this, this total tyrannical approach he's taken to free speech in Canada. So this is a good news for, for us as well, because it just shows you that when, the people speak, these people at the top who are running the wrong way, they do listen from time to time. And I'm really glad they've been able to survive. I talked to a friend in Canada a minute ago, and she said that the truckers are absolutely elated, and they're ramping up again for continued protests.
That's wonderful news. Anything further on all of that, Patrick?
The main thing that concerns us, I'm also the executive director of Citizens for Free Speech, which I started several years ago, to fight for free speech in the First Amendment in America. It's under huge attack here. What happens in Canada is a forerunner of what could happen here.
Absolutely.
And we cannot sit down on this issue. We cannot be quiet. And I don't know if you've had a chance to interview or if you've listened or read anything from Dr. Matthias Desmet in Belgium, talking about mass formation and, psychosis, stuff like that. People ask me all the time, why is society crazy? I say, well, I think I have an answer why they're crazy. But what he said and what we see here, I think, is so prescient. The only vaccine that we have for tyranny is free speech. If we are beaten into silence, we're done. And we see this with, for instance, with the masking of the kids today throughout school, that all the states have relaxed their vaccine or their mask mandates. Every one of them, I think there's one left. They've all said no more for adults, but the schools, no, not the schools. They're still saying, oh, no, no, those little kiddies must, they have to keep wearing their mask in school. We know it's dangerous. We know it's not good for them. But I brought out the point in a recent interview. I said, you know why they can get away picking on the kids in schools? They have no voice. They have no voice. The only people they can talk to is their parents. They can't go talk to the media. They can't write articles yet. They can't get on radio programs like we can. They have no voice. They are victims because they have no voice. Anybody or any group that has no voice all of a sudden will find themselves as victims. And this has happened throughout history. The last century is full of it. Our century is full of it. We have to keep our voices alive. And it's not an issue of believing and agreeing with everybody. That's the whole point. You need discussion. You need to talk. You work things out. You come to meetings of mind. And maybe you can't agree. You agree to disagree and you love each other anyway.
Children are among, of course, our most vulnerable citizens. I would say the most vulnerable. I think I once wrote that that whether you're a father or a mother and an abuser or being abused, no one gets as much abused ultimately as the children, because they're so vulnerable, because they make us feel vulnerable with their vulnerability, and that also touches our anger and freaks us out. I don't like the mass psychosis stuff, and I'll tell you why, and it might lead to an interesting conversation. The mass psychosis suggests there's something really abnormal about a dictator taking over a country and all the people going along with it, that there's something strange about doctors following the instructions of totalitarians, something odd about citizens just doing what they're told, when in fact, this is the history of humanity since we lived in any size civilization, starting with villages and tribes. And since the beginning, leaders of villages and tribes have led us to slaughtering ourselves and others in wars. They have clamped down on us, controlled food. When the Spanish got here with all their bad habits to Mexico, they found in Mexico City, they found the kind of brutality that they'd never seen before, even fighting the Islam during the Islamic invasions of Spain. Multiple slaughters of people in a systematic, mechanical fashion while everybody stands by and says nothing. I won't go into any further details. But the odd, if anything looks like a psychosis, is the founding fathers. They're so different. And the wives they work with their bravery and getting together and declaring that government is to serve the people, that human beings have, based on the Judeo-Christian principles and John Locke and what would become the Enlightenment, that human beings have a right to be free and to have free speech and freedom of assembly, which is both having been sorely tested now in Canada and in the United States, where we have the January 6th people, some of them still locked up more than a year, like we're in China or Russia. And that's the natural state of human beings in large groups is to be obedient. I noticed that in high school in the 1950s, when I realized that my classmates, everything they were told about what was going on in the Cold War and this and that, they simply believed whatever they were told they believed. And I had a couple of new radical friends. I was a progressive in my own head. I later learned that I wasn't a progressive at all when I met some conservatives and libertarians, but I thought I was a progressive. I was thinking for myself. And So I think we need to not call this a mass psychosis. This is a mass return to people living in a cowed fashion at the heads of monarchies, dictatorships, slavery. I mean, really, we had slavery in America not very long ago and in the world. So not a mass psychosis. It's a mass reversion to people being cowed by the systems they live in. And it's axiomatic that when you have a bureaucratic government and somebody takes it over, everybody goes along with the new government and the bureaucrats follow what they're told. This is the way it is. I mean, Hitler had the mass cooperation of medicine and anthropology, and especially once he got rid of the Jews, and all of the basic professorial behavioral sciences supported him. My colleagues in psychiatry were the biggest supporters of Hitler because, as my listeners know, I describe psychiatry as really the backbone of totalitarian thinking and authoritarian thinking in many ways, and transhumanistic with drugs and shock and so on. So I know that's like an intrusion onto where we were going, perhaps, but we need to stand up to get that yoke back off our back, because it's the natural way, folks. The people who get to the top are violent and hateful. That's how they get there, and they will impose upon us if they can. Do you have any thoughts about that, or you just want to take a deep breath and move on?
Well, no, I honestly see the phenomena. I'm not a professional in any way, shape, or form. I see the phenomena on a global basis. There's a large group of people who are not going along with the narrative, like you and I, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, I didn't go along with it from day one.
Yeah.
What makes me different than somebody else is wearing two masks still while they're driving alone in their car on the freeway? You know, it's like something's different. But I see a large body of people, some of which are in political positions to implement policies that are very cruel and very wrongheaded, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And some of those people that were in that camp now are starting to fall out of that camp. They're starting to wake up a little bit and say, you know what, maybe we were wrong in thinking this way. And you're right about people following, though. I'll tell you, I saw a video that was of an experiment they did in an optometrist office, where there was a big waiting room and they had one ringer that didn't know what was going on at all to come in and sit down, and then other people would come in and they'd ring a bell and they'd stand up and sit down, and you know, they kept doing that, and the person that didn't know what was going on was looking around and figured, and all of a sudden she stands up, and she said when she hears the bell, it sits down. And this went on for generation after they changed everybody out. And it pointed out pretty much exactly what you said. People will follow along with what other people are doing. You put a mask on next to me, I might put a mask on too. And, you know, you get used to it, and all of a sudden everybody's doing it. But when that kind of behavior kicks in, it's like reason seems to check out. And that's what really has led us to a lot of trouble today, in my opinion. People just gave up their ability to think critically. And of course, they got scared. Fear is the basic layer of propaganda. Yeah. If you're going to have propaganda that's meant to deceive, you have to deliver it with a heavy dose of fear, because people's brains check out when they're scared. They fly from reality, and say, if anybody offers them safety when they're really scared, I'll do that. You know, whatever it is, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. And they have no judgment attached to it. They say, well, maybe I really shouldn't do that. You know, maybe that would harm me more than doing what they say.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed early on in my reform career, going back to the 70s, when I'd be driving down to even to Fox News or to CNN or anybody, and being driven by a cab driver or off in a car when we lived in D.C. and they'd send a car. And I'd be talking critically about psychiatric issues, not drugging children, why lobotomy was bad. I was conducting campaign against lobotomy early on. And the driver would always totally understand what I was talking about, because it was like common sense. Yeah, I drug my kids. Man, I had a drug problem when I was in my 30s, with, you know, the driver's likely to say. And then when I get down to the station, it's like, what? You don't believe in giving Ritalin to children for ADHD? And, you know, that they don't get it. And I think that there's a principle that I continually saw, was that the higher up you get in the media, and I think it's true in anything, business or in the bureaucracies, the less critical thinking you have in the people you're dealing with. Instead, you're dealing with shrewdness, cunning, the ability to climb over others, a certain insensitivity to any suffering you might incur. And you get to the top or near the top, and your whole identity is wrapped up in a certain way of thinking and behaving, and to give up a piece of it. Like if you're a CNN or MSNBC reporter, your identity is all wrapped up in your liberal friends, your liberal parties, your smoking dope, and whatever else is a part of your culture. And if you lose your job, you see yourself as losing your friends. And indeed, if you were to admit that you thought of voting for Donald Trump, you will lose everyone. And I think that that's a really fundamental issue, that people get terrified of losing their identities and their social networks. And I see that with the physicians I deal with. I mean, I might go to a doctor and he may comment something about COVID, and all I say is, hey, I've written a book that some people think is the foundation for understanding what's going on with COVID-19. And they get panic on their face. They guess right away from just my little bit. And of course, I look like a nice guy, a pleasant elderly gentleman, surprisingly young looking for his age. You know, they're really pleased to, until that moment. And they get fear and anger in their eyes. And they say, what are you for, hydroxychloroquine? You know, it kills people. And then there's no more talk.
Yeah.
So they get terrified of their roles, and being a physician, instead of making them feel independent nowadays, because there's so few, makes them feel a threat of losing everything.
Yep. This is very much a part of the free speech issue. And in my opinion, we thought about this for a long time, the whole cancel culture and the self-censorship mm-hmm. that goes on. And people have been conditioned, now heavily conditioned, to self-censor.
Yes.
This is a master of social engineering, I have to say. What the early technocrats call the science of social engineering. Yeah. They're masters at this. They've been thinking about this. We think and joke about Pavlov's dogs or B.F. Skinner, you know, think, oh, ha, ha, you know, that was yeah. back then. Sorry, guys, it's alive and well today, and they're exercising it on people. So it's a pretty radical thing. If you can take a group of people and instead of just censoring them outright, teach them to self-censor. Plus, you don't have to go through the effort. And they've done it. Many people are in that mode right now. They won't speak. They won't talk. They'll exactly. avoid certain issues. They'd like to say something, but they don't dare because of fear of being ridiculed or, you know, lose their job in some cases, whatever.
Yeah.
And this is a real shame. This is a huge free speech issue. It's kind of a silent killer for free speech. You know, usually you think free speech, well, I can stand up in a town square and say whatever I want. Well, that's part of it. But censoring yourself is really the sickest deprivation of free speech I could think of.
Yeah, that's right. It's like what a child does. You know, a child learns not to speak, and then things that will get them in trouble, then not to think them, and then they get confused, and they get all the guilt and shame. A funny story about Pavlov, you know, who was, this really is the arch original strongest behavioral scientist. But he has a little chapter in a book called The Freedom Reflex, in which he says, we've been talking about this again and again amongst ourselves, and there's no way around it. We have to conclude that animals have a freedom reflex. And you can see how adaptive it is, because if you weren't just always wanting to do what you intended to do or your purpose was, you would get you know, stopped by a little obstacle in your way or a threat in your way. And so you have to kind of want to be going the way you want to go and behaving the way you're behaving. And I have never seen, and though he's the father of all this, I've never seen another behaviorist in my entire career of reading psychology mention the freedom reflex. Never heard of it again.
You know, one of the first fundamental errors that was made in those days, and the technocrats, the people at Columbia University in particular that kind of crystallized, codified technocracy, the one fundamental error they made, of course, number one, they were mostly atheists, and they said very much they didn't believe in man as any kind of a superior being. Man was just an animal, like the cattle in the field, the sheep, whatever, you know, for no other good. They're just another resource on planet Earth that needed to be managed. And so when they removed man from his elevated state, if you will, from his divine, divine-oriented, you know, intelligent, exceptional, et cetera, and just made him an animal like any other animal. Then they said the next step was...
We got 5 seconds.
We need to manage those animals. And there here we are, they're managing us.
When we come back, more from you. We are talking with, having a very robust, great conversation with Patrick Wood. He's the author of Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. He's a co-author of The Trilaterals Over Washington. He knows a lot of stuff, and I'm just going to ask him to now begin the second hour. Second 20 minutes, 22 minutes.
Part of the question people want to ask is, why has this come to us at this time in history, number one? And why is it global? You know, we've never had a global thing like this before where the whole planet was doing the same thing at the same time. With all the fear and everything that's been going on and the policies that have been adopted everywhere in the country, everywhere in the world, it's not just here. Everybody is wearing face masks. Everybody is on lockdown. Everybody was social distancing. Everybody was scared out of their brains to come out of their house. What, you know, what on earth happened? And I think people are starting to wake up to this and ask good questions. I have been doing some testimony on the national stage, international stage for what is going on here. And I would want to point out a quote that I use frequently by the lady who was in charge of the Paris Climate Agreement years ago, not that long, but several years ago. Her name was Christiana Figueres, and she's not with the United Nations anymore, but she was the ramrod behind the Paris Climate Agreement. Huge undertaking, and it was, from her point of view, hugely successful because something like 187 nations in the world signed onto it, and it really started to transform the international community. She said verbally in a press conference shortly after, in 2015, shortly after the 2030 agenda meeting, which kind of recodified Agenda 21, she said, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." These are fighting words. They're also criminally significant words. It shows that they have an intention, number one. If you were a criminal prosecutor, these are the things you'd look for. Well, is there intent? She just declared, yes, this is what we intend. Is there a timetable? Is there a schedule to actually get it done? Yes, there is. She said there is. Do they have the means to do it? Well, considering that they've got access and pretty much control over 197 nations of the world, or 87, yes, they have the ability to try and pull it off. So from this day forward, whatever that schedule was in 2015, we did not know then. We had no idea, really. Well, maybe it could be 20 years, it could be 30 years. Now we know it's not. It was between 2015 and 2020, That was 5 years. That was apparently the timetable, because when the COVID pandemic hit, the first thing that we experienced was a shutdown of the global economic system. Point, I mean, you just couldn't deny it. You looked at it, everything was out. The supply chain started to crumble. Shelves were bare in some places. I remember, you remember the big run on toilet paper of all things. I don't know why they picked out toilet paper. I would have picked canned beans or something to eat. I don't know. But, you know, the global economy was really crippled in that time, and it's been crippled ever since, and it's not over yet. They're still beating on the economic system all over the planet to apparently try and crush the economy. And we say, why is that important? Well, the World Economic Forum gives us clues here. The World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, the German head of it, is totally in bed with the United Nations. They love the UN. The UN loves them. So yes, they're like brothers and sisters. Klaus Schwab has said, we're going to have a great reset. We're going to build back better. These terms imply that something got burned down, like your house burned down. You're going to build back better. Well, that's a good thing. If your house burned down, yeah, you get some money back from the insurance company. You want to build back better. Who'd want a worser house than you had before? But a great reset also implies going back to zero as well. You think about resetting a counter or a stopwatch. What does it do? Well, it forget all the seconds that was there. It goes back to zero. It starts over again. These type of phrases, messages, signaling coming from the World Economic Forum are right in line exactly with what Christiana Figueres said.
Yeah.
We're going to burn it down and we're going to start over. That is the economic system, capitalism, mm-hmm. free market economics. We're going to do it differently. We're going to have a resource-based economic system. They call it sustainable development. And everything they've done, everything the United Nations has done since this doctrine came on to life back in 1992, was to drive people into sustainable development using fear-mongering techniques. Global warming was the biggest one we had. There was others, but that was a big one. And then when global warming kind of fizzled in 2019, they couldn't get any more traction with that because the polar bears came back to life in the Arctic. And they found out, well, they really didn't die. And that, well, you know what? The ice didn't melt either. Thank you, Al Gore. They couldn't get any more traction with the global warming alarmism. Then along comes the pandemic. They jumped the rails. They just jumped the track. They went from that group of alarmists over here, just walked across the street,
exactly.
And they picked up the mantra with the COVID fear-mongering again. Same people, same universities, same crack computer models that we're using in global warming that never came true, I might add. Not one of those computer models ever had anything. And the same has been true with this. And when I saw the sea change taking place in early 2020, where all these people were just moving across the street, putting on maybe a different color coat or something, and say, hey, we're here, and we're here to tell you, you're all going to die and soon if you don't do what we tell you to do. And all along the way, with whether it's global warming or whether it's this, the only solution they ever offer is sustainable development. Ever. That's the only plan they have, is sustainable development. That should tell people right there it's a con. Because if they were serious, if they were really thinkers and cared about humanity and they, you know, whatever, anything other than their agenda, they would at least be open to discussion for plan B, maybe plan C. Maybe there's some things we can do to kind of take care of good old beat up capitalism over here, which has problems. But do we need to throw it all out and just go over and do this brand new thing that nobody's ever done, nobody's ever tried it before, because we trust you? Well, you see, there's problems with it. So I saw immediately that there was a scam taking place in early 2020. Mm-hmm. And it was unmistakable. Of course, very few people wanted to listen back then. But now that we're going into our third year now, right? Now, people are waking up all around the world to the fact that, yes, it is a scam. It's a con job from day one. It had nothing to do with science. They never intended to have anything to do with science. Real science, let's say. Real science. It's pseudoscience. So that's the same way that the global warming crowd treated all the 30,000 climate scientists that said, you guys are crazy. You know, this stuff, what you're saying is nuts. They canceled them. They rejected them. They censored them. They threw them out of universities. They fired them. They ran them off. They wouldn't publish mm-hmm. their papers. They shamed them. They called them names. In some cases, some people died. They don't know how they died, but they died. And this is the exact same modus operandi that they're using with COVID now, right? You dare stand up against it and say something sensible that made sense 5 years ago, but now it's against their narrative. Why, you must be the scum of the earth or something. Come back to life. And, you know, they want to just get rid of you. Well, this is really causing people's heads to spin because it's all just propaganda. And the end of it is just pure propaganda designed to make your head spin and designed to force you into certain activities and actions that will make you be a supporter of the Great Reset when it happens and drive you into sustainable development. It took an ugly turn, I think, however, with COVID, in that it brought out the nature that goes along with technocracy of transhumanism, which for the first time in history, genetic engineers now have figured out that, hey, we can manipulate genetic code, and so we should. And so they've developed this new class of shots. They're not vaccines, truly, but they're shots that that inject synthetic messenger RNA into your body. It has varying effects on people. It was meant, they said, to boost your immune system, give you like a little, like drinking an energy drink, I guess, if you're trying to get some energy to run a race or something. But we also learned very quickly there's been horrible side effects to this, and that's still ongoing. But the modifying of genetic codes is particularly disturbing. And it's on the same track, but it's just a different topic. The genetic structure of the world was put on the plate for grabs back in 1992 with Agenda 21. And you wouldn't have been sensitive to it back then if you, because who knew what the biotech industry was? Who knew what it would become? I had no idea. I had no idea.
Right.
You know, they talk about genetic engineering. I said, well, I was agriculture guy. I studied plant selection. I thought that's what I meant. Well, you're gonna breed plants and whatever and come up with something new, and it's going to be great and more resistant to this or that. Well, they engineered seeds, Monsanto. They engineered insects, Bayer. They engineered animals, cattle, pigs. They engineered fish to grow twice as fast as they should grow normally in the oceans. They've engineered every facet of life that can be genetically engineered on planet Earth, except for one thing, us. And now it seems that the crosshair has been put on humans.
Oh, yeah.
And that is that when you see the whole picture of what they started out with, modifying genetic code, it's like, guys, you have stepped over the line on this. You know, whatever else you have in mind, you can certainly take this particular agenda and stuff it and get out of all public policy arenas. You don't belong here. You're just crazy. You want to play Dr. Frankenstein? You go buy yourself an island off of Greece or somewhere, and you go do it over there. But you're not going to do it to the whole world. So we have kind of several things going. It's all related to the same track.
Yep.
But this transhuman movement that wants to use genetic manipulation to manipulate humanity into humanity 2.0. And Klaus Schwab, by the way, at the World Economic Forum talks openly about this. This is not a secret. It's wide open on his website. Human augmentation, they call it. In other articles, just call it flat out transhumanism. That is applying technology to the human condition, the ultimate goal being to achieve immortality. Now, it's going to take a while to get there, but they say, oh, but we're going to get there. We're going to achieve immortality and we're going to become gods one day. Well, I say good luck to them with that. I guess, you know, it's not going to happen that way. you know, people have been dying for thousands of years, and, you know, I don't know a lot of people that really want to live forever that way, your way. But in the process of executing their dream, they're affecting all the other humans on Earth that don't agree with them. This is what's wrong. This is drastically wrong of anybody to say, well, I, the scientist, have come up with this new thing that you're all going to love. Now just bend over and let me give you that shot. And, you know, or whatever it is, let me experiment on you. And then people start dying. This was kind of the same mentality that we saw in Germany during World War II. Scientists and engineers think, hey, we got some guinea pigs here. They can't protest. Let's just do what we want. Let's just experiment with humanity. Yeah. Did those guinea pigs want to be experimented with? Nope, they didn't. They didn't anyway. Now we see it on a global scale. And it's, you know, I think people are getting pretty fed up with it and they're starting to catch on to it. And I will say, as a part of Citizens for Free Speech or even Technocracy News, somebody wants to do something to their body, that's their problem. That's not my problem. It's your choice. If you want to, you know, and that goes for even drug addicts and people that smoke and, you know, do other things I might not agree with. Look, it's your body. It's your choice. Now, we might have a conversation. I might talk with you about it. We could, you know, say there's some risks and dangers. But you know what? When you get right down to it, people need to be informed and they need to make their own decisions about their own life. Just don't make decisions for my life. That's where the rub comes in. And that's what a lot of people are thinking right now. You know, you guys have no right to force me to take something that I don't want to put in my body or to force me to wear some mask that I don't want to wear.
One of the things that interested me so much about the genetic engineering of people is, you know, in Europe, there's been a big movement to, you know, outlaw GMO foods and corns and things, and not in the U.S. particularly. And yet the Europeans made themselves into GMO humans with these injections of RNA and DNA literally into their body to change how their body was going to produce proteins. And with no regard to the fact, we had no idea how much this could become permanent in some way, or, you know, various biochemical reactions might even end up changing the nuclear DNA as well. Again, just falling lockstep. One of the things I like to talk about briefly, it's just constantly on my mind and fits in with all of this, and I'm sure you have a lot of information I don't, which is that this group, which I call the global predators in the book. We folks, we are talking about the global predators in our my wife and our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. They not only are godlike and manipulative and all these other things, but they really want to kill people. I did not understand this before I really got into global and into looking at the global predators. You know, I thought it was maybe a phenomena of Hitler, phenomena of, you know, some mass murderers, killing women or children, or killing the neighbors, or killing another a culture nearby or whatever. But these people who are scientifically oriented actually hate people. I think one of the things I wrote years and years ago, Patrick, which I think has turned out to be so true, is that we cannot be objective toward other human beings. If we seek objectivity, we become hateful. We are not meant to be objective toward each other. We're meant to be passionate and engaged toward each other. And what happens when people become objective, like Eichmann, you know, who just did his job, we become actually hateful on a very deep and profound level. And the more I'm reading, even since the book and writing about, so many of these people actually worked on issues of how to kill the poor in the world, how to reduce the third world populations. They are clearly thinking of a world in which there were many fewer of us, and the numbers of them would maybe grow a little, but they'd have all the You'd probably know the German better than me. Hitler's a Lebensraum. What is that? The freedom of the taking over Europe and killing all the Poles as well as the Jews, making more room. That this is really a phenomena, and we have to get used to understanding that people in power have continually, chronically become violent toward the people under their care and the people next door as well. And as far as the Chinese are concerned, they're behind a lot of this, which we didn't get into today, but the book goes into a great deal. The UN is a province of China, and the World Health Organization, Tedros, is a stooge of China. So you end up going back to the ultimate power-hungry, violent people who don't believe in God and who are transhumanists fundamentally. They believe they can make people into anything they want or kill them instead. And that's the ultimate danger, I want to remind people, is really communist China. And I think the reason why they acted when they did was they had to stop a second presidential administration of Trump, because Trump was an announced anti-globalist. He used those words. He opposed people in his party who were globalists. He opposed the Koch family, who were financing the Bushes and other globalists. But then he got so taken in by thinking that Operation Warp Speed was something he invented and or created with Fauci. And in the book, we display that's just, we actually take pictures of portions of some of his the plan they had, their business plan, 2015-16, that they had laid out, which included all of the, not by name, but all the Operation Warp Speed. It included Moderna and Pfizer. It included getting America to pay for all the vaccines and using them for the bigger picture. The bigger picture, which Patrick is talking about, and the bigger picture is dominating humanity and doing it in a scientific, pseudo-scientific. The Nazis thought they were very scientific. They had a lot of scientists backing them. So many scientists were pro-Nazi and Nazi regime. In fact, if they hadn't been anti-Semitic, they probably and killed the Jews and let the others flee, they probably would have got the atomic bomb and they could have ruled the world because they had tremendous scientific workers. So this is very interesting. That was a wonderful discussion you gave. And folks, it's not like the world has to stay confusing to you. Listen to Patrick Wood. Go to his website, citizensforfreespeech.org and technocracy.new.com and get his book. It's still relevant, Technocracy Rising. And realize that they have been intending all the destruction they are exposing us to. They've wanted to hurt us. They've wanted to cow us. They've wanted to cull us. They've wanted less of us. And this is so hard for me to talk about because 2 years ago, if I tuned in on Peter Bregan talking like this, I would have said, he's nuts. I mean, he shouldn't be on air. No, I wouldn't have said that because I've always been for free speech. But he would have said, how did he get on here? Or something like that. Patrick, it's a pleasure to meet you, to get to know you. Wish you luck and stay in touch, and we'll talk again in the future. Patrick Wood, thank you very much.